The Story of Jesus, Lecture 18. The story of Jesus is the story of my life, the story of your life, the story of the life of every human being who has ever lived or will live on the face of the earth. It is the revelation of the divine God nature within me and you for eternity, and I love it. Lecture 18. The story of Jesus is the story of my life, the story of your life, the story of the life of every human being who has ever lived or will live on the face of the earth. It is the revelation of the divine God nature within me and you for eternity, and I enjoy it. Think of this. It's you. It's me. You were Napoleon. You were Marie Antoinette. You were Jesus Christ. You were all these people because you are one. We are one. There is only one in this universe. And that's the allness, and that's what we are. That's what you are. That's what I am. Now, if we were to go around saying, I'm Jesus Christ, they'd put us in a white jacket and tie the hands behind us and put us in a little institution and say, as soon as you make up your mind who you really are, then you can be free. You see, if you think you are someone other than who you are right now, then you are a loony. You are a loony toony. You are, for the loony bin, you are not normal. You are not healthy. And the reason you're not healthy is because you're not stable. And you're not stable because you think you're someone else. Now, are you who you are? Yes. Are you who someone else is? Yes. Are you the allness of the universe? Yes. Are you every single being that ever lived, ever will live on the face of the earth? Yes. Are you all of that right now? Yes. Is there any time? No. Is there any space? No. Science tells us there's no time and space, and yet they do not cooperate on the idea that all is one. And they're saying all is one. Now, when you say all is one, what do you mean? You mean all is one. I am number one, but I am not only number one, I am the one, the only one. Now, we had the School of the Master here in the year 2000. It was a great school, a great 3 months that the individuals who were here learned a lot of things about themselves, but they did not learn that they are one. They were taught they were one. They were taught they're number one. They're taught there was nobody else here at the seminar except that individual and me. Each as an individual and me. And you were told not to hold the door open for somebody else because there's nobody else there. I mean, now that's Looney Tune. When you believe that there's somebody else in this universe besides yourself. Now, that's not easy to teach. In a relative world, that's not easy to teach. They have a hand that they show in a picture from the National Geographic. And in the hand is a very real-looking hand. And then next to it is the hand of an individual. And then the individual takes a spike and he picks it into the hand. And the hand is so real, he rebels at the idea. He repels at the idea that the hand is being maligned. That he takes a hammer and hits it. Oh, no, don't do that. You see, and then you do that often enough, and pretty soon you think that is your other hand. That is your other hand. And pretty soon you attach yourself to that hand, and you believe that hand is yours. And pretty soon you act as though that hand is your live hand. And it is. It's a strange and a wonderful thing how science reveals these things to us. It points out to us that we are not what we appear to be. Our illusionary body is as much into anything else as anything can be. Years ago, when I was doing the Russian study with the parapsychology and peritonology group, we were doing studies into auric studies. We were doing studies into energy body, and Thelma Moss at UCLA was doing research into that. She was a doctor with high-level students working on energy bodies. And she used the Carillion photography as a method of showing that when a hand was cut off and you photograph the stub of the hand is there in an energy appearance. She first showed us on leaves, where you cut off one little piece of a leaf and you photograph it, the leaf is still there. The energy part of the leaf is still there, even though the leaf had been taken off the tree long ago and was dry and dead. When a part of it was cut off and was photographed, the whole leaf was still there. The energy body of it was still there. We are an energy body, and as an energy body, we form ourselves into whatever things we think are interesting to form ourselves in. What was your model? What was your image that you used to form your body here that you're using right now? Why do you form your body with the thought that your body is whatever shape and size and sex it is? Science has told us and tells us that if we will have the thought that we are skinny and we can just eat anything we want, that the body will readjust itself to be skinny and let you eat anything you want. But you don't believe it. You have to really go into it deeply. And when you do, your body adjusts to that. Your family has had diabetes in the family. Therefore, you will have diabetes. Therefore, you will have this experience. And that's true. Because you believe it. And you believe it is logical and reasonable. And so, therefore, you experience it. Now, we have gone away from our original premise. And the original premise is that there is only one, and that we have gone away from the image of the one. We have gone away from the image of the ideal, original purity and integrity, ideal, original purity and integrity, ideal, original purity and integrity. We've gone away from that image into who we are today. Now, we can return to the image of our original purity and integrity. We can return to the Christ consciousness, if you will, the Christ consciousness, which is so pure and so beautiful and so complete and so aware of itself, and this is present in every being. Not only human beings, but in all life, animate and inanimate, in all objects, animate and inanimate. Whether it's an atom, which is used as a structure for anything else, or whether it is a stone, which too has atoms. And isn't it interesting? All life is made up of atoms. And some atoms have a certain life consciousness to it, like we think humans do and trees do and plants do. And we think that rocks and minerals do not. Well, they certainly do. Now, why have we gone away from our original premise of our original purity and our original integrity? We have done that because we have failed to realize that we are the master of our thought. And the various thoughts of the people around us influence us. The various attitudes of the people around us influence us. And we think, we're like a little child. And the little child comes running in the house, "Mama, there's 1,000 kids out there. They're chasing me. They're after me. There's 100 million kids out there." And mother opens the door, and there's 2 or 3 boys out there that are not chasing the kid, but are saying, "Come on out and play, come on out and play," you know. And they mean play, they don't mean hurt him. But he has this image of being scared and frightened by the boogeyman, by the thousands of children who are chasing after him. And it's really nobody chasing him, it's just some friends who are giving him a hard time. And friends do that sometimes, silly as it may seem. Now, we are one. If that little boy had turned and said to the 3 boys, "Okay, guys, what are we going to do? What game have you got in mind? You know, Let's play in my sandbox or your sandbox. But no, they watch movies, they watch TV, they watch violent crimes, they watch violent shows of warriors chasing after people and ancient tribes and the First World War, the Second World War, and the Third World War, and the Fourth World War, and the Fifth World War. They'll keep having world wars until they get tired of them, but that could be a long time off. Why do you want to participate in that sort of thing? Why do you want to participate in a world that has yet to find its original purity and integrity? So let us today turn around, if I can use that term, and go backwards, if we will, to our original purity and integrity, which means we leave beside all this imagery that we have built up. And it is done unto us according to our belief. It is done unto us according to what we can conceive it being. And Jesus taught us what we can conceive it being. Be ye perfect, as is the presence of the infinite allness within you. Go back to your original purity and integrity. And you can do that. You can do that not by any physical movement, not by any mental movement, but by a letting go. It's as though you're hanging on a tree limb up over a great chasm, and down, 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 down it goes below you, and you're hanging on there, and there's nobody around to help you. There's nobody around to pull you off. There's no, and you can't do this forever. So you say, okay, I'll let go. And you know, if you let go, it's sure death. But you say, I'll let go. I'll let go and take what comes. When we can have this ability to let go in the face of sudden death, you might say, in the face of sure death, and believe that all is good and all is very good, that letting go and the past is behind us, all that limited us is behind us, all that kept us in bondage away from our original purity and integrity, all the thoughts, all the ideas, all the concepts, and then you know what you might be doing? You let go and you start flying. Wow. You say, what the heck, I got nothing to lose, let's fly. And so then you say, hey, I'm going to stand still for a second. So in midair, you stand still. You're the master. And then you say, okay, I'm there. I'm not falling. I am there. Perfect speed is being there. I am there, wherever there is. And there is my original purity and integrity. We let go, and we let the divine in us guide us, direct us, take us into the awareness of all that we are. And then we begin to realize that we are the allness. We don't have visions going through our mind because we don't have a mind. We don't have visions going through our eyes because we don't have eyes. We don't hear things because we don't have ears. We are one as all. And when you're one as all, then what are you? You're all. You are up there, you are down here, you are in there, you are out there. But you see, when you are with your original purity and integrity, there is no more a limited body on which you depend. There is no more a limited environment in which you live and depend. There is no more a limited human attitude which tells you something is right or wrong or warm or cold. You have no sense to any of that stuff. That just doesn't exist for you any longer. What does? What does? That's the next question. If we don't have that awareness, what does exist? Well, to describe it to you is quite a task and fun, but to describe it to you would be in this direction. Can you feel good inside yourself? Can you just feel good sometimes? You don't know why you feel good, but you just feel good. And there's no references to it. There's no music, or there's no sound, or there's no thinking of mommy or something like that, and you feel good. You just feel good. And this goodness is such an all-pervasive goodness. It captures your essence of who you are. You haven't got a body. You don't have a mind. You don't have any sensitivities at all. But you feel good even though there's nothing to feel the good. But you feel this good. It's a sensation of feeling good. And as I say, to describe it is rather challenging. Now, you feel good. That feeling is so good, happy,
fulfilling.
Yeah, it's so fulfilling, and yet there's nothing to fulfill. Yeah, but it's so fulfilling. It's so right. It's just so right, and you just feel so right. I don't know if you've ever had that feeling. I know I have, and you feel just so right, and it's not relative to anything, and that's part of what you're going to feel, part of what you do feel when you are in the allness. And then you have this feeling of it being so right. Then you have another feeling. You have a feeling of all-knowingness. You know everything everywhere. You know, and there's nothing to know, you know, if you understand that. There's nothing to know, but you know it all, which seems sort of contradictory. But you know it all. You are aware of your being in the allness. You're aware of your being, it's a terrible reference to say it this way, but you're in your mother's loving arms, you know. You're in the loving embrace of your father or your mother. And they care about you, and you feel this sensitivity of all is right with the world. All is right with the world. There's nothing to worry about, nothing to concern yourself about, nothing to think about. All is right with the world, and that's another sensation that you have. Now, you've come to your original purity and integrity. And in your original purity and integrity, there is no need for anything. And yet, if you wanted to experience anything, which you wouldn't want to experience because you are it, but if you wanted to experience something, your thought of that something would be instantly there. Now, if you had the foolishness, you think, well, I'm going to experience my human self. you'd experience it, but you'd experience it in a way that you never experienced anything before, because there'd be no possession, no judgment. There'd be nothing that would make you feel that you belong or you didn't belong. It's all yours. The universe of ideas is yours. The universe of illusions, of thoughts are yours. Everything is yours, and yet you don't own anything. It's as though you could walk outside of your house, if you had a house, and get in a car, if there was a car there, and drive it away, and you would be in the right. It does not belong to anybody, just to whoever is using it. And all of life experiences, all of, you see, to try to describe the indescribable with human values makes the values ludicrous. It makes them stupid because they don't exist. And there's no possession, and yet there's everything. And there's nothing, and yet there's everything. And there's you and only you, and still there's the allness. Now, what if you were to create other people in your world? What kind of people would you create in your world? You'd create people exactly like you. And would you give those people freedom to do whatever they wanted to do? Quite likely. And would you watch over them to make sure that they were always exactly like you, a perfect clone? No. You'd release them. And they would go off and expand their own understanding of themselves and be whatever they were. And that's what they are today. That's what you are today. That's what the people that you see in your world are. They're your creation. But they're your creation who are sort of expansive unto themselves, doing whatever they are. Now, is each of your creation number one? Sure. If you're number one and you create, then everything you create is number one. Why not create every single being in your creation or every single concept in your creation as its original purity and integrity? Because if you did that, it would be quite boring. And you know how easily you are bored. If you realize you are the allness, if you realize you're the only one, you can feel lonely. I have some of the group here on campus in the School of Masters who confess to feeling very lonely, not being able to talk to anybody else, not being able to think about anybody else for a period of time. We didn't have it for the full time. And we went through different periods of these activities to give them an idea of how it feels to be in that attitude. Now, I had them stand on one foot or just stand period for a long period of time, and they couldn't handle it. And you know why they couldn't handle it? Because they told themselves they couldn't handle it. If instead of thinking of standing, they would just think of everything else that they wanted to think of, they wouldn't even realize that they were standing, and they wouldn't realize that standing was a difficult task for them. If you were to say that you're standing, and you're a mother or a father, and you're holding a baby, and the water is coming up, the floodwaters are coming up around your waist, and you're holding that baby, and you're standing, and if you fall over, you're both gone. So, you stand, and you don't think a thing about it. You don't think of standing, you just think of holding the baby. You just think of maintaining your life, maintaining your awareness, and you could go on for a long, long period of time, days in fact, and you would stand, but you say, well, how would you stand in the water for days? You don't stand in the water. You don't think that you're standing in the water. You just think that you're holding this baby and enjoying this baby and loving this child and wanting this child to have a life. And you see, the water is not in your mind. Standing is not in your mind. These things are not in your mind. And you can do anything. You can do anything. We have had people that we have fed diets in previous schools, and we have given them diets that were utterly useless, utterly nothingness, but looked very attractive. And they ate these diets of empty foods, and they gained weight. They ate the diet of empty foods, and they just felt full, and they felt wonderful, and they felt satisfied for a period of a month. And some gained weight, some lost weight, some stayed the same, but they had this feeling of oneness, of satisfaction. And then when I explained it to them after the School of the Master, and the only reason I explained it to them after the School of the Master, because I wanted them to continue with that awareness during the school, but I explained it to them afterwards, and they all realized that that's true, what they had been eating were empty calories, were just empty nothingnesses. You see, we don't realize that we don't need a lot of things. They were getting very close to the possibility of needing nothing to eat whatsoever. And another step would have taken them to needing nothing to drink. And another step, needing nothing to breathe. You say, well, Herb, that is really pretty far out. That's pretty far along. No, it's just a natural step. But those who came to the School of the Master had to all 100% accept me as their guide. Not to believe in me, not to trust me, but just to accept me as their guide and know that whatever I was guiding them into was something that was going to be beneficial to them. And whenever they did that, they had miracles happen. And when they didn't, then they walked away empty. And it's surprising how many can walk away empty. because they have this self-ego that keeps them from it. That's why when you let go of this tree branch and you drop, with the feeling of total release, come what may, so be it. And you're falling, and you say, well, let's swim. Da, 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 and you swim in the air. Or you skateboard in the air. You know how these guys take these things, and they jump out of airplanes, and they have these skateboards, snowboards, and they're just sailing along through the sky. Hey, they're not sailing on those skateboards. They're sailing on their consciousness. They're thinking that they're doing this, and their body is doing it. It has nothing to do with that little piece of wood under their foot. It's just like people say, they got to have water skis to ski. No, you don't. You ski right on the base of your foot if you wish, or on your knee, or on your butt. You can ski on the top of your head if you wish, depending upon how athletic and energetic you are. But this is common. You see this in many reports of people doing things like that. It takes a certain consciousness, a miracle consciousness, a belief in yourself. So when I worked with people and I had their full belief, I had their full desire to accept me as their guide and sharer in what they were working with, magic happened. And we had magic take place in our 2000 seminar too, School of the Master. And some of you who were present there do not know anything about it. You know nothing about it. Because those who were involved, and you think you had all the names, those who were involved are not around anymore. They're off doing their thing. But you think you know it all. I have explained to you spiritual healing. Spiritual healing is when you have no remembrance of any illness. You have no remembrance of ever being ill. No one else has any remembrance of you being ill. The hospital has no remembrance of you being ill. The doctors who worked on you have no remembrance. The nurses have no. There's no report in the hospital about you. Your parents don't even remember that you had any problem, which was quite serious. Nobody knows. A spiritual healing is when that is completely erased out of, not erased, but it never happened. You see, it's in the zone of twilight zone, if you will, where it never happened. It never happened. And this is what happens when you return to your original purity and integrity. The game that you played as human beings and the limitations that you had, as you were playing the game of being Jesus and hanging on the cross, if you will, as you were playing the game of Napoleon and you were being such a marvelous emperor and such a marvelous man that people followed you with great enjoyment and great respect and honor, or if you were a Churchill in England who all of his life was so-so, but only when he met his calling of being the Prime Minister during the Second World War did he really sparkle. And he was over 60 at the time. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that sometimes we don't wake up in our life until later in our years? And sometimes people who wake up, they disappear from all life, and you never remember they were there or that they were not there, because they have arrived at that state of consciousness of being one as all, and they are living in their original purity and integrity, which is where we really live, and nobody knows them. Nobody knew them. And whatever great artistry or great offering that they gave to humanity, it's as though it were never there. It melded into everybody else who came along. As you know, every time some great invention comes along, five or six people come up with the same thing somewhere else. Around the world, people came up with the light bulb at the same time Edison did. And Edison just was able to beat them to the punch. And he didn't even know he was beating them to the punch because he didn't know they were coming up with it. And they didn't know he was coming up with it. And you know, A lot of times you get beautiful inventions and beautiful ideas, and you don't think of promoting them because that's not important to you. You just did it because it was fun to come up with that beautiful idea. This is how we live our life. This is how we can live our life. This is how we can experience the divinity that we are. And as we say here, this is the story of Jesus, the story of my life, the story of your life, the story of the life of every human being who ever lived or will live. It's a revelation of the divine God nature within me and you for eternity. Now, you see, as I read about the life of Jesus, I don't see anything that makes it so spectacular to live in as the life of eternity, you know. Sure, he was a great guy. He recognized his awareness of his oneness as God, his oneness as all. But man, you know, if Jesus was really God, why didn't he create the world? Why didn't he create human beings? Why didn't he create animals? Why didn't he go out and do different things and so forth? And that's a good question. It's a good question. You too are God. Why don't you go out and create? You do go out and create, but what do you create? Some little itty-bitty things, you know. Now let's get going on some biggie-biggie things, you know. And what would be a biggie-biggie thing? Just imagine, if you created yourself as, I know what the game you like to play. You like to be invisible, you like to be teleporting, telepathic, and all that other good stuff, which is so minute and so insignificant in the game of things. But okay, if you want to play it, that's fine. It's so easy to do. It's so easy to do that you can get hung up on it. It's just like eating ice cream, you know. You get hung up on it. And if you eat too much of it, you get sick of it, and then you don't even want to bother looking at it. And that's okay. But that's what we do with these gifts of the Spirit, these abilities that we have. We get hung up on them. I can take you to many of the mystical halls of the universe. I've been in many of them, and been fortunate and blessed to meet many of the people who were playing these games, but they play them in private. They didn't play them in public because there was no benefit in playing in public. What if I were just floating around here and let you see me floating around and you'd say, Herb floats around. You know, isn't that great? Oh, well, bully bully, how wonderful. Herb floats around. Or Herb appears and disappears. You don't know. You don't know when I appear and disappear. You don't know when you appear and disappear. You think of your home, wherever it may be, and pop, there you are. You think of your family, and you're in their arms, and you're talking to them. You think of your favorite vacation spot, and poof, there you're off to your vacation spot. And you don't think anything about it. And if you really had wanted to stay there instead of coming back here, you wouldn't think anything about the fact that you were at a seminar, you left it and went off on vacation and stayed away. You could, and you do, and you are doing these things. Now, you want to have some relativity to these things. Well, now, the more relativity you want to these things, the less of these things you have. Because the relative is stable on its limitations. The absolute, that's a good term. The absolute is stable on nothing. It's the allness. It's the isness. It's the everywhereness. If you were, now, television, not television, but the movie people, they like to create stories. And they create, like in Alice in the Wonderland, who walked into the magic mirror, and then she's off on her journey of magic, you know. And they have this boy step into the television set, and all of a sudden he's off on another dimension, doing strange and wonderful things. They have these youngsters who are space cadets and so forth, and they get busy on doing things in space, and they step from one zone to another. The black hole of outer space is the way to step into another dimension of time and space. And of course, there's only one dimension of time and space that's right here and now, the allness. But they write about it. They create it. They say, wow, yes, yes. Because you know that this what you see is not the allness. And then anything that you can see is also not the allness. It's only an indication of the muchness that the allness is. You know? And you've only begun to view, and then once you really start seeing it, there's nothing to see. We were watching the mandalas that we had a video on here the other day. And the mandalas were constantly coming and going like a kaleidoscope, with the beautiful colors flashing back and forth and developing into these lovely patterns. And we think to ourselves, wow, there's an infinity of patterns there. And in truth, there was not. In truth, there was maybe one pattern that had many colors and many sizes to which the various scopes were developing. But it was really just one pattern. And all of life is just one pattern. You are just one pattern, your original purity and integrity. And when you experience your original purity and integrity, you'll recognize that you are just one pattern, and you are the only pattern, and you are the number one pattern, and everything else is a creation of yours. You say, well, how about these other people? There are no other people. When you walk through the door, close it. Don't leave it open for the next person coming after you. There's nobody there. During the seminar, I would tell our many students who were there, I would say, I'd like a glass of water. And so they would each get me a glass of water and set it down in front of me, and I'd have so many glasses of water there, and yet they did not set one glass on top of the other. They set it next to the other, you know, as though that was the place for their glass to go. Not that there were other glasses there, but that was the place for their glass to go. Sometimes it was quite close to the edge of the table. But that was the place where their glass was to go. And they didn't say, I'm putting it here because there are other glasses there. They said, I'm putting it here, period, because that's my choice. And that is your choice. Now, if you could get yourself into gear and start thinking, there are no other glasses there. There are no other people there. And of course, you think there are no other than you think there are. But when you are aware that you are the only glass that's there, and of course, only the same type of problem, you are the glass. The glass is better, closer. You are not a glass, because then there could be others too. But you are the glass. So give me my glass of water, the glass of water. So you and I are the only people that are there. And I'm not there. I am merely an instructor, a guide, a channel for you to come into your deeper understanding. And once you go into your deeper understanding and you find your deeper understanding, I don't exist anymore. I am dissolved because I'm really not there anyhow. I have no reality. The only reality is you. The only reality is your divinity, your original purity, and in your original integrity, and that's all that you are. Now, I've told you lots of interesting things here, and clicked your mind a couple times, and you think to yourself, well, Herb, you mean that when I arrive on my awareness of my original purity and integrity, you will cease to exist? Well, I hope I cease to exist long before that. I would like you to be more advanced by the time you reach your original purity and integrity to have long since released the image of me guiding you. You're your own guide. You're your own direction. You listen to the purity and goodness within you, which is what my constant program is for you, to listen to the divine within you, follow the divine within you. I don't want you to need me. I don't want you to want me. I don't want you to even think about me. I want you just to think about yourself. Think about how wonderful you are. Think about the greatness of you, the greatness of your individual, your uniqueness, and of course, then that's all wrong too, because the moment you're entering into your original purity and integrity, there's no greatness or uniqueness or specialness for you to think about yourself being, because then what are you?
All.
The allness. And when you're the allness, there's nothing to compare you to. You're the allness. You are it. You have, you've been cooked, so to speak, like we say. You're finished. You're done, and you're happy. Now, if you want to take off on another joyous adventure, like here in our last lecture, we said Jesus' concluding words could be paraphrased as saying, "I'm off to another adventure. Let the Comforter come to you all. I'm off to another adventure." And how wonderful that is, to be off to another adventure. How wonderful that is to have new responses to life and new ways of looking at it. But then again, let's just presume you started out as the original purity integrity, okay? And then you went on this human journey. And on the human journey, your whole business was to come back, to find your way home, to find your way back to your original purity and integrity. And then you come back, you find your original purity and integrity. Do you want to go off on another journey again? Or have you learned the lesson that really the allness is pretty all-inclusive? Could you vicariously live through the journey of other people if you wished? Which would be you. Could you vicariously live through being Jesus or being Moses or being your mommy or daddy? Could you vicariously do this? And of course you can. But the difficulty with vicarious living is we so easily switch from vicarious living to living. We all of a sudden claim it and enjoy it so much, participate in it so much, belong to it so much, we leave our original purity and integrity and fail to it. Now, I've told a story about the Atlanteans. And the Atlanteans lived in a time quite a while ago, and the Earth's tectonic plates are always moving. And the Atlanteans were living at the time that they were extremely advanced. They could think their thought and instantly have whatever they wanted. They would think their thought and they'd have a lovely house. They'd think their thought and they'd have a car. They'd think their thought and they'd have a beautiful weather. They'd think their thought and they'd have a rainstorm or a snowstorm and a nice fire going in front of them and feel real good about it, you know. They'd think their thought and create any condition, any circumstance that they wanted. And their neighbor could be having a bright sunny day and they could be having a very stormy day. By their choice, in whatever they wanted. They could create themselves having a tremendous earthquake sweeping through their land, destroying everything except them. And then they open their door and everything's okay. They create as they wish by their mind. And it can be in or out or whatever they choose at any moment they chose. Well, these were the Atlanteans. And they were extremely brilliant, extremely vain people. And the scientists of their time came to them individually in mass and said, you know, you're working too hard. You're thinking of all these things. Let us think for you. Let us use our minds and our creativity to come up with ideas. Well, they did. And they came up with ideas that were the concentration of power. And they didn't realize the danger of what they were doing. But they created the concentration of power with the great inverted pyramid. And as they did this, they created such a massive power that it completely destroyed the Atlantean nation, the Atlantean countryside. Of course, in the process, before it happened, people went to other countries and went around the world, and some of the people who knew of this marvelous ability of the Atlanteans were living in other areas and told the people of the other areas about it and demonstrated it to them. But like the Atlanteans who allowed the scientists to take over, these people soon strayed away from it because it was not the common thing to do, and they were thought to be miraculous people for doing it among people who didn't know how to do it. And it was a matter of didn't know how to do it. They could do it, but they didn't know how. And so its usefulness, its use was forgotten, And today, we think we don't know how to do it. But today, as well as then, we can do it just as easily, just as powerfully, just as wonderfully in every area of our life, if that is our choice. Now, the teachings of Jesus were to offer us the opportunity to experience that if we want to. And that's a big step. And many people think that Jesus is to be worshipped as the Son of God and as something special. Well, he's something special insofar as he lived what he believed, he walked what he talked, and we can too, and we should, and we will, if we begin to take an interest in it. Now, we take David Copperfield, one of our well-known magicians, magic men of this century, and he is currently on television and other things and doing some rather unusual things, rather spectacular, but it's all mental. It's all mental and not permanent. Now, that's what life really is, all mental and not permanent. But he makes buildings disappear and makes them reappear. He makes them disappear because he makes you think they're no longer there. And so you believe they're no longer there, even though they are still there. Now, he is working with a more wonderful magic than perhaps he even knows. And that's the magic of making a concept be believed when it is not so. We live lives built on concepts that we believe which are not so. We believe that our body is whatever it is, and we think that that's the only thing that it is, and that that's the only way it's going to go. And as Dodie was saying the other day, she looked through some literature on medical things, they had a prosthesis. They had a prosthesis for the shoulder. And they could put it on the shoulder, and so you could start using your arm again if your shoulder bone or your joint there was injured in some way. They have them for your knees and your legs. They have them all the way up to your hips so that you can have full legs built out of metal or built out of some sort of fiberglass or whatever. They have things that they can replace your heart. And they can replace your heart with a not real heart. But that they found a little difficult because the real heart varied its activities based upon the age and need of the body. Whereas a heart that is built out of materials, out of substances like metals, it does not give and take to whatever the body's general movement is, the stress is, and so forth. And that'll come. That'll come. They will fabricate every area, every object on the body, and they've done many strange things already. And they will fabricate these things until one day the body will be completely, you know, made up by man. And then the next step will be, how are you going to fabricate the brain? How are you going to create a head with the eyes, ears, mouth, and nose, and a brain, and things like that? Well, that they will do quite easily too, and it'll end up being a step just by their thought that it is so. Now, we read about these things. We read the life and teachings of the Master of the Far East. We read Living with the Himalayan Masters. We read many other books, and I'm sure there are more than I could ever begin to point out to you and than I have ever read. But the thing is, every one of them says these things are real. These things are where it is all at. And you are not there, and you will never be there until you stop living in the present and live in the now. You stop living in will be, to be, is, and live, the is part's okay, but live in the now. Live in this instant. This instant, which knows no past, no present, no future, this instant is the only, and it's the only instant you do live. However, you are so slow in living in the now that the now gets past before you even live in the present. and the future is upon you before you even realize it, and then it's past before you even realize that you had it. And this is true. This is true. And we want to do that. Now is the acceptable time, as the words of Jesus had it. Now is the acceptable time. Now. And that the infinite quality of all that we are is within us right now. We have, as we said before, the book of life in us now, our individual Bible in us now. And it'd be great for us to start reading that Bible and listening to that Bible and living that Bible and sharing that Bible with ourselves and just having a great old time. Now, do you think that you could handle that? Really? I know you say, I'd like to try, but you don't mean you'd like to try. Yeah, I'd like to do that. I'd like to do that. But all I have to do is say this one thing, and it shows you right where you are. Your family won't know you. Your friends won't know you. You'll have no desire for having associations because there will be no people to associate with because you're number one, you're the only one. You know? And you know exactly what you think about yourself. You think that you need to have a relationship with your family. Well, you're going to die. You're going to die. So now, in 2 days, you're going to die, so call your family in and say goodbye. Well, why bother? What if you were killed in an accident? You didn't have time to call anybody in. They would just say, Pop's dead, Mom's dead, they're dead, big deal. On goes the show, you know? People really don't care about other people's lives or deaths unless they leave them money and so forth, and they think that's wonderful. But the big point is, you're so needing to say goodbye. You're so needing to have a relationship. You're so needing to have people love you. Mm-hmm. Now, Sylvie went back to Switzerland, and what did she do? She visited all her relatives and friends, and they just were delighted with her. Oh, yeah, woo, 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 woo. And Sylvie came home. Oh, they all said, woo, 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 woo. And hey, that's cool. But that's possession. That's possession. And we all do it. And it's a silly thing. And what did Lydia say? She says, Herb, you really love your son, don't you? Well, of course I do. Of course I do. And would you do anything for your son? I sure would. Even though I don't spend a lot of time with him, I'm not with him very much, don't call him too often or anything, but if he called, I'd be right there. Now, why? Am I possessed by him?
No.
Is he my family? Is he my world? Is he? No. He is just a person in my life that I have a great deal of respect and love for. Yeah. Do I have a great deal of respect and love for a lot of people? Sylvia has a great deal of love and respect for many in her family. And yet, if Sylvia were to die this minute, the people in her family would say, well, Sylvia, nice to know you. Enjoyed your company. Have a good journey wherever you're going, whatever you're doing. And they wouldn't miss her. They wouldn't be unhappy because she's never home. She doesn't write to them every single day. She's not, you know, in their minds every single second. And she didn't even send them the copy of the pictures that she made. Oh, yes, I did. So, did you?
Yeah,
see? So they got the pictures, and that's great. But you see, you're not possessed by others as much as you think you are. You're not needed by others as much as you think you are. Life goes on when you're not here. And the life that goes on for you is devoid of any possession by anybody or anything. You are a free spirit, and you are everything. You are your children. You are your husband, you are your wife, you are your mother, your father, your sisters and brothers. You are all the people who have ever touched your life. And what is it that you are as all these people? Is it good and very good?
It is.
Huh?
It is. Yes.
It is, yes. It's good and very good, and it is. It is whatever it is, but it is.
That's right.
But it is. And you see, That's your real life. That's your real life at the moment. But your real life is your original purity and integrity, which is a complete, if you will, loss of memory of any past. A loss of memory of any desires for the future. A loss of memory of any individuality in yourself. Because you, at that point, live, move, and have your being in the allness. And the allness is quite exciting and difficult to describe to you, because who has ever really been awake when they were in their allness? And you can, if you wish. Well, the story of Jesus is a great story. We had our ups and downs with it. We had our ins and outs with it. And the most difficult thing about the story of Jesus is to describe it from the fact that it is our story. It is the story of our life at that little juncture of our beingness. And today, we're living the story of ourself, which is the story of Ellen, you know, which is the story of me, which is the story of you, unique individuals. And you know, in an instant from now, in a snap of the finger, in a nowness, that story could be completely different. Completely different. The other side of the earth could be wiped away, and then there'd be no place to go home to. You would have a new attitude toward life. All the things that you had known and that you had loved are off somewhere else, and they're no longer available to you. Your whole life would change instantly. And how would you handle it? Would you cry? Would you be sad? Or would you just say, adios, amigos, and do your own thing? Well, this is what we want to learn to do. This is what it means to be number one and to live in a world where you are the only being present. Well, tonight is New Year's Eve, and you're going to celebrate New Year's Eve, not so much as a night or as a day, but as the recognition that right now is the only moment there is. And the moment of 2005 touching in your consciousness is the moment that you can recognize your original purity and integrity. You can do all the silly things that you think are fun, like levitating, teleporting, and doing all the neat things. But be just as crazy as you can be, as we talked in one of our lectures. Be as outrageous as you can be. And then, when you're so outrageous, you do it. You do it. When one little boy says to another, walk across the tip of the roof of the house there. And the other boy says, my mommy won't let me. And then the one kid says, I can do whatever I want to do. And he gets up there and he walks across. And the rest of them say, wow, how did you do that? And what did he say? I didn't do it. I went up there, and then I was on the other end. There was no walking across the tip of the roof. I was just walking. I was one with my choice of being on both sides and then on one side. Now, hey, that's heavy-duty stuff. Yes, it is. It's heavy-duty stuff. That's called oneness stuff. And you think it's not done? Done all the time. Little kids do it so easily because they don't realize that it's supposed to be difficult. So have a lovely forever and know that of all the people in the world, you're my creation, and I love you, and I see you expressing your original purity and integrity now.